Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of the nation's favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello, how you doing? You good? You had a good week? You alright? Raining, man. Whoa, it comes down, doesn't it now? I've never known rain like it. Madness, I tell ya. Madness. I did a gig the other day, right? I did a gig at this university, and we did alright. And afterwards we were told, oh, you broke a lot of rules there, a lot of rules. You were talking about things that you shouldn't have been talking about. And it was like, what are you? But you just said we did a good job. And went, yeah, we did, yeah. But, you know, you were talking about this and that, and there's things we're not supposed to talk about. And I was like, oh, what? It's getting mad out there, people. I get it. Don't offend anyone. People don't want to be offended. But you can't stop people. There's going to be bad things happening. There's bad things happening in the world. Sometimes you're going to feel a bit shit. Sometimes you're going to feel bad. Sometimes you're going to try something and you're going to fail. But you just learn from it. But now we're trying to round off the edges of life. It's going to end up like Demolition Man, that film, Sylvester Stallone. And we'll end up just being nice, like too nice to each other. And who wants to live in that world? You know, I mean, to this day, I still don't understand how you use the three seashells. How can you use those to go to the toilet? Doesn't make any sense. Anyway, let's not censor everything, for God's sake. It's going to be boring, isn't it? Isn't it? Like someone said to me the other day, like, swearing. I was like, swearing? Like, don't be... Why do you have to swear? He goes, because it's fucking brilliant to swear. For God's sake, people. We're turning into... Oh, I don't know what we're turning into. Anyway, this week's guests, right? Now, this is what happened. Tom Rhodes, who I've been a big, big fan of for many years, when I first saw him up the creek many years ago, and I saw that he was over in the UK, and I'm like, I've got to grab him, got to grab him. So I reached out to him, and he was up for it. He said, yeah, cool, I'd love to come on, love to come on. And in the between times, while I was sort of researching him and finding out about him, and I discovered he's got his own podcast. And it was an episode, and he was talking about him and his wife breaking up and how sad it made him feel. And it was amazing. And I really want to talk to this guy. So anyway, we worked it out. And it turned out he was staying over here. He was staying not far from me in sort of East London, Essex borders. And he was like, yeah, look, just come. Why don't you come to where I'm staying? And we'll just do it there. So I went over there one afternoon in the beginning of the summer. And I get there, and he's staying in Reginald D. Hunter's house. Because he's on tour. He's supporting Reg Hunter on tour. So I go in and I'm like, all right, Reg. He's like, hello, mate. You know, he goes, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm just going to do a podcast with old Tom. He's like, oh, righteous, man, righteous. Do you mind if I jump in? I'm like, well, yeah. No, of course not. That's amazing. So Reginald Hunter, he finished his lunch, and he wandered out to the back garden where Tom and I were sat. He sat down, and he joined in. So I got two for the price of one. Two great comics for the price of one. I mean, you can't get better than that. You know what? I genuinely spoil you. I spoil you on this podcast. I don't actually. You lot are brilliant. And thanks again for all your support. You're also brilliant. All the lovely messages that I get. And I just want to say thank you to everybody. Every single one of you. You're worth your weight in gold. It's just nice to know that people are listening to it, enjoying it, and getting something from it. You know, it really means a lot, and it means it's really worth doing. You know, so thank you for that. And if you really enjoyed it, like I keep saying every week, get onto like the iTunes and give us a five star rating, little message if you wish, just pushes us up the charts a little bit, and then it gets other people interested. You know, so if you could do that, that'd be fantastic. Thank you so much. So let's get stuck into it. Everyone, please welcome Tom Rhodes and Reginald D. Hunter.
We shouldn't have music blasting in the background.
So I'm on the Bob Dylan soundtrack. I love Dylan. Like I say, I was brought up, my dad was a huge Dylan fan.
Yeah.
So we used to have Dylan, Stones, old blues, like old, really old blues.
That's what I grew up.
Hated the Beatles. Never had the Beatles in the house. We had the White Album, but that's because my mum bought him it for Valentine's.
I like the Beatles, but I'm the same. I'm much more of the Stones were way better because they were dirty and nasty.
That was it. That was it. And it wasn't, I didn't listen to the Beatles until 94 when Oasis blew up, and then they were going on about the Beatles. And so then I'm like, let's go and check the Beatles out now. And then I was like, oh yeah, I dig it. But yeah, the Stones.
I always loved the Beatles. I mean, you know, they made a song for everybody, old people, little kids. There was this Dutch woman that I dated years ago when I moved to Amsterdam. We took a weekend trip to Liverpool just for a Beatles weekend.
Yeah, right.
And then later when I had to, when I was a presenter on the Dutch travel show.
Oh, wow.
I pitched it and we filmed that Beatles weekend in Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it was great. But I'm definitely a Stones dude. My first concert in '81 was the Stones.
Oh man!
I was like the Beatles were like were too clean and
The
Stones did drugs and sex and you know.
I don't want to bring the mood down or nothing, but when he was talking about it, I don't know a lot about Dylan. There's some tracks out of his I love.
Yeah.
And I like the image and the mythos.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the Super Bowl 2014, and he did. That's when Chrysler released. They Bob Dylan commercial. Dylan for Chrysler.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And not to be outdone, 2 years later, Dodge came out with Martin Luther King Jr. for Dodge pickup trucks. I mean, you know.
Yeah. How you gonna be with Bob?
Yeah.
Gotta go get the King, man.
It's funny though. There's only certain people.
Gandhi's gonna.
They're gonna
those
come
little,
back.
Bird scooters.
Jesus for Coke.
Sunny D. I think there's very few artists down the ages that have gotten away with shit like that. Like when John Lydon over here was advertising butter. You know, you're like Johnny Rotten's advertising butter.
But you know, come on, man, let that guy have whatever money he can grab, you know? Yeah. Willie Nelson did Taco Bell commercials in America like 20 years ago and everybody was in arms about it.
Yeah.
He had tax problems. Give him a break. Let him take a bite of the taco and smile.
But I think that's it. You have to have earned it for people to go, yeah, all right, like Iggy Pop doing car insurance. You know, that's Iggy Pop. Let him fucking do it, man.
I remember I was asking my sister, I was struggling with that Bill Hicks kind of, do I sell out? Do I do this?
Yeah.
My sister, she's got her own ministry. She says, you remember when the apostles went to Jesus and they asked Jesus, should we pay taxes? And Jesus said, show me a coin. And they showed him a coin. And he said, who face on that coin? They said, Caesar's. And then Jesus says, then give those things back to Caesar, which belong to Caesar, and give the things to God, which belong to God. The nigga face on it. Let him have it.
It's his now.
It's his.
Yeah.
I mean, keep money when your face on it.
The only way comedians are making money off podcasts, not the only way, but the primary way is through advertising.
Yeah.
So you got guys like Bill Hicks and I'm not Bill Hicks, Bill Burr, Mark Maron, and these guys, they're reading stamp commercials and mattress discount commercials and shit.
Man.
It's like, you know, Robert Townsend said in the movie Hollywood Shuffle, "Hoes gotta eat too."
Yeah, man.
Hoe cakes.
That was my dad's exact reaction when I was telling him about the fake paternity suits. Don't be mad at him, son. Hoes gotta eat too.
I was accused in a paternity suit once.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I've not had that yet.
Thank God. Thank God for the miracle of DNA testing.
Oh, man. But in America, it's difficult to make money. I geeked out over there for a bit. I did bananas in Poughkeepsie, and then I went to the treehouse in Connecticut. But there was no money. Like, unless you're...
Well, if you're there and you're getting in with them...
Yeah.
You don't make any money until you're at the headliner level.
Right, yeah.
Openers and the feature acts, you're sleeping in your car, staying on...
Yeah.
I used to hitchhike to gigs when I started and slept on friends' couches forever.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I remember there was this young... She wasn't all that young. She was an American comic. And she came over. She was living. She had moved here. And she called me up one day crying. I hadn't been in the game in like 5 years. She called me crying, just, I can't get no gigs, nobody gives me gigs. And just, I was Dr. Save-A-Hole back then. And I was like, I'm fine, I'll get you some gigs.
Mm.
And I called the people I had some pull with. And I got her like 5 gigs.
Yeah.
And, you know, but they were places like Nottingham or, you know, Watford and stuff. And so she called me back after I had these people get in touch with her.
Why didn't you get me better gigs?
What is this shit?
I'm kidding.
Close enough. She said, I'm noticing that these gigs are outside of London. I noticed that if I took a bus, I'd get back really late. And it's really dangerous.
Damn it.
And wow. I was like, oh, okay. You're not serious about being a comedian. Because I did this.
Yeah.
Every time I got, I know I had to go and sleep somewhere and sleep on.
I've slept in many bus stations. I'll sleep at the station.
You're doing it, man.
And then I'll get the...
She essentially said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'll just sit here and wait for times to change.
I mean, I get it slightly different for women.
Yeah.
But even then, there is an element of you still have to ring people and go, oh, listen, I know we don't know each other, but we're in the same, we're doing the same gig. Can I crash at yours? Or can I do, you know, and it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to get this joke years ago about, there's all this talk, every year around Edinburgh, there always starts to be this talk in these newspaper articles about the glass ceiling of stand-up comedy for women.
Mm.
It's like women can't push through. And it's like, really, is there anything in the Western world today left that if a woman really wants to do it, she's not allowed to?
No.
And it's like, and the reason why there aren't more funny women is because women aren't socialized to be funny. Mm. They're not socialized to believe that being funny will get them the things that they want in life. But then I'd say, if you could make it so that you could convince women that being funny would guarantee you a man and some children, you'd be funny bitches coming out your closet all of a sudden. It's just out your cupboard.
Yeah. I'm coming in clowns.
Knock, knock.
Yeah. Oh, let me sleep. But there are fewer women doing comedy, like you say, so there are fewer women that are ready to be on TV and do the bigger shows.
There's a lot of great women, especially in America right now. A lot of great.
I mentioned per capita in America, this probably, but I mean, it's like, it's tougher. And I'm not gonna lie, it was easier for me over here because I was almost like a woman. I'm black.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, like you got a parade of white middle class dudes coming on, and just all of a sudden, just breaks up the monotony. I get that.
Yeah.
But I've also had to go on bills when there was one other black comic on, and he was nervous because there was another black comic on.
Yeah, right.
And when women do that sometimes too, it's like, oh God, I don't know if artists can stand or two women in the same night. This is the thing. And it's just, it's the attitude you gotta change. Funny is funny.
Yeah.
And the will to do it is the will to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's it. I've said that to loads of young comics, and they're always saying, oh, do you have any advice? Do you have this? Do you have that? And I'm like, you just gotta do the gigs.
Yep.
Got to do the gigs, and you can't go, oh yeah, but like you say, like, oh, it's far. Oh, then I've got to be back. And you just got to do it. You either want to do it or you don't, you know, and you're going to sleep in some weird places. You're going to meet some weird people.
I grew up in Georgia too. And it's like, there was like no places that was like right next door. Yeah. Like you had to travel to get to places. You had to drive more than 3 or 4 hours sometimes.
Yeah.
And my dad taught me earlier, he says, if you really want to be somewhere, you'll find a way to get there. Yeah, if it means something to you.
Yeah. Oh, man. I did the other day, I just had, like, on paper, you know, I'm doing the gigs, and it, because it's all like they pay you later on, I had no money to leave the house. I'm ringing up a couple of people. I'm like, listen, you owe me 100 quid. Is it all right if I have it now? Because I need petrol money. And they're like, really? I'm like, listen, don't make me beg. I'm 47 and I should be fine. I'm begging you for £100. But it's just, it goes like that sometimes. Yeah. It's just how it is.
Yeah, man, everybody get tapped every now and again. Yeah. They get uptight. And it's just, and I remember when 2007, I was getting ready to come back over here. And my father, he just turned 100 recently.
Fuck, and, man. And,
I was getting ready to go, and he says, come here. He says, you be careful. He says, they're getting ready to have one of the depression things that they have from time to time. And he said, they love to act like they only had one in 1929, but they've had several since then.
He says,
when money get tight, he says, people become less generous, not even just with their pocket, but even with their listening. He said, be careful. He said, we're about to go through a very ungenerous time. And he told me that in 2007.
Wow, man, it's true. Yeah, and you grew up in Georgia.
Yep.
Where did you grow up, Tom?
Not far, down the road in Florida.
Oh, really? Southern boy, bouncing around.
But you have a lot in common. You know, you grew up with a lot of the same stuff, and baseball, and just references, and TBS, superstition, and comedy.
Optimism.
Yeah. It seems to be a more romantic... Yeah. Romanticism to the South.
But I started out on the Southern circuits, and I played in every town that ends in Ville or Borough. But there was never, I don't think I ever did a gig in Albany.
Yeah. There was, I remember in the 80s, there was a...
The Comedy Zones had gigs all over the South. They were in Holiday Inn Lounge.
It was in a Holiday Inn Lounge.
They had endless tours. You could work for them forever. The guy who ran it was a dirtbag. He would double dip. He would book gig, and then he would charge you an agent fee.
Yeah,
but it's your gig. And then also he was getting an agent cut from the Holiday Inn. So he was triple cutting.
Triple cutting it. Yeah.
I think he's in jail for some kind of fraud. Yeah. You know, once a scumbag, always a scumbag.
What was the money like?
It was pretty decent, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you'd have to drive like crazy.
Yeah.
And so I was I wasn't the opener. I would be like the feature act and shit. But it was the guy was such a chump who booked it. It'd be like, you know, you're doing a string of one-nighters in Georgia, and let's say the weekend is in Macon. There was one that was in Macon. So, you know, you'd do, you know, another weekend was in Savannah and shit like that. But like the dude would do chumpy shit like, all right, I'll book you for the Georgia-Macon run, but you got to go to Memphis and pick up the headliner.
Oh, what?
And drive. So there was always some chumpy shit like that. It wasn't the Comedy Zones. It was actually Bonkers out of Orlando had some gigs around the South one time, and they had a gig in Mobile, Alabama. And
wow.
They asked me if I would drive a van full of chairs up. So I did the weekend, and I drove some like white worker van from Orlando to Mobile, delivered some chairs, and fucking did the weekend.
That's what I'm talking about. You just, yeah. You're like, oh, gigs.
You need me to paint? You mean?
Yeah, listen, the gig's yours. Can you bring the stage? There's some people. But it's just out. Is this just stuff like that, isn't it? It's just. But all these stories now make. You've got wonderful stories to tell.
Mm.
There's a lot of gigs, a lot of people now, they're getting into comedy straight from university and they got nothing to say and not been anywhere yet, you know?
The most valuable thing you have is your story, and the best thing you have as a comedian is your experiences. Like Reg and I were talking about this last night, I started when I was 17.
Fuck.
So man. When I was 17, 18, all my jokes were about the thoughts of a 17-year-old.
You know,
I hadn't lived anything.
And now you've been, I mean, that's the thing with comedy. I've traveled the world now, seen all manner of shit and experienced all, just from talking about my penis for a living, basically.
But see, there comes a point,
it's a winning formula.
There comes a point, though, when you've seen a lot. I've heard it said in my house, it's easy to see through shit. The hard part is acting like you hadn't.
How do you unsee
stuff? How do you like? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. That's scratched into my brain now forever. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's taken me a while to get over that shit. But we were talking about as well. Just you and I mentioned this now. We're talking about can be quite solitary as well on the road, you know, and you've experienced this as well, Tom. It's like you'd have this gig and everyone in there's a few hundred people and they're all going, oh, that was the best thing I've ever seen. And cut forward to an hour and you're just sat on your hotel bed and you're like,
oh, well, yeah. I was always out chasing drugs and women.
Oh, so, yeah.
I mean, I wasn't sitting on the hotel
bed. And me, when, if I wasn't doing that, I mean, I didn't ever feel bad about being on my own on the road because no. I know the hell that it is to feel solitude being in the midst of lots of people.
Yeah, true.
And that,
yeah,
I think that's worse.
Yeah.
And also, but I get shit done when I'm by myself, and I'm a huge reader. So, like, when I'm traveling, a lot of people hate flying and traveling and shit. That's when I can knock out books and shit.
Yeah.
I still have two older brothers who are jock, thug, bully animals.
And Republicans.
They cheated me and backstabbed me and beaten me up my whole life. And I have such gratitude for them because nothing could have prepared me for a life in show business better than not being able to trust me.
Hey, what's that? That's not a knife. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You turn around and you go, oh, hey, brother, what you doing with that metal paper in your hand?
You can't trust the people you think you can trust. Wow.
I feel a more rounded human being since doing comedy, weirdly. Like you say, you see the best of people and the worst of people.
It does make you a better person. I think if you got any intelligence, because, you know, I don't know if it was with Reg, but I've had this conversation with many times with many different people. Like, I knew I couldn't be a racist or a homophobe because I wanted to have a career in show business.
Yeah.
I couldn't hate Jews and gays and blacks. And because, like, no. You know, all my favorite comedians were black and Jewish.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, my heroes.
Yeah.
And that's what has always meant the most to me. So,
yeah, man.
And then if you're one of the fortunate comedians who gets to travel the world, then you're even more enlightened to different flavors of humanity.
Yeah,
I think it does make you a better person.
And I think you can talk about any difficult subject that you want on stage, whether it's Israel or immigration or feminism. But what you can't do is make people feel accused.
Nah.
You can be as angry and as sharp as you need to be. But I mean, the people that's sitting there right there, if you make them, naturally, some people, through the lens of booze or whatever, they gonna feel accused even when you ain't talking to them.
Yeah.
But then my mom used to say, a hurt dog will holler.
True.
Must have stepped on some bottle.
Yeah, if you're angry, then I must have, I've obviously touched.
Because I do think that there's a greater tendency nowadays for people to personalize whatever they're hearing from you, even if you're not talking about them.
Yeah.
So if you know if you're a white comic, and you're talking about a specific instance, a situation where you dealt with a brown person, then you know there's gonna be brown people like, you talking about me? You talking about us? And I think that's been done to people. I don't think people choose to be like that. I think it's been programmed.
Well, I remember growing up and there were people that said racist things around me. I remember my great grandma. She used to give you money when you saw her. She said, here's some money, Yeah. Oh, yeah, cool. I remember being that young, I put it in my mouth. Because that was a kid. I'm like, yeah. And I still remember to this day, she's like, oh, no, don't do that. That could have been in a black man's pocket. And that's the shit that's swimming around you. And you're like,
My grandmother was super racist. So she was always telling jokes. She had tons of racism.
Yeah, there was loads of growing up people, friends of mine. Yeah.
You know, and I grew up in the South. I mean, like in southern towns, you still got the remnants of the Civil War everywhere. Like the little town I lived in, it was a little town. It was a little citrus farming town where I grew up. Like it's 18 miles east of Orlando, and then Orlando expanded. They built a circular highway around it. And now it's a highway exit. And it looks like a lot of places in America with the glut of suburban American bullshit. Chili's and Target and all that shit. But when I grew up there, it was a really charming little citrus town, you know? And then there was a street called Division Street, and it never dawned on me until I was an adult why it was called Division Street. The black people lived on one side of the town, and the white people lived on the other.
Yeah.
And then, like, where Trayvon Martin was murdered is Sanford, Florida. I'm from Seminole County, so Sanford is the biggest town in... Like, if you have court or traffic tickets, you know, you go to Sanford. The black neighborhood in Sanford, because Sanford's on this waterway that goes all the way to the ocean, that's been there since the Civil War.
Yeah, wow.
And then all in the around the South, there, you know, there's the way towns are, you know, the on the proverbial other side of the tracks, you know, or Division Street.
Mad, isn't it?
Whatever.
It's just, I can't even get my head around that. It's always like you see the advert for Jack Daniels, and then, oh, it's Lynchburg. And I remember there's another comic, Phil Wang, was like, change the fucking name, man. It didn't even occur to me. That's my privilege. I'm just going, oh, yeah, that's probably an interesting town. Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's, I even remember saying a few years ago, this is before all the UKIP and the Brexit stuff that was happening in the UK. I remember saying, going, oh, yeah, racism seems to have died off a little bit. And that's just me walking around in my little
Naively thought, you know, that it's funny. Like now, if you think of the words post-racial, which a lot of liberal people were throwing around in America after Obama was elected. And I my own liberal naivete, thought we were moving in that direction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't fooled by it for a minute. Simply because I had seen it before. I came to Britain in 1997, and I got here a month after Tony Blair was elected. And it was with the exact same rhetoric and fanfare that Obama was brought in with. It was identical.
Yeah.
And so I had seen it, and it was like, and I was trying to tell my people, I was like, well, hold on. Because remember, y'all ain't nobody heard of this nigga 2 years ago.
Yeah, suddenly he was like,
and it's just, and it's like all of a sudden he's the hope, and you know, I might have to help you edit this.
That's
all right, man.
No, that's valuable information.
Yeah.
No, you mentioned that to me the other day, and that's like,
it did seem weird out of nowhere.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it just seemed weird out of nowhere. Yeah, it was like, you know, it was, this is what we need now. And he go, okay.
I was standing there. I mean, I was there with inauguration day with my family and just my dad and all them crying and stuff. And I was just like, this ain't what y'all think it is. This is not the second coming.
Didn't smell right to you.
I was like, well, I'm gonna see what he do.
Yeah.
Because you know, I mean, he used the same kind of vague campaign, change you can believe in, and you know, and just you can't do the same old kind of politics with the same old kind. And then one of the things he campaigned on was shutting down Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. And then, I mean, then he got, it seemed like he was in office for a minute when he got the Nobel Peace Prize. And then that made me start being suspicious of the Nobels then. Like,
he got it down the line.
I mean, and then just under his leadership, I mean, we expanded our war scope.
Yeah.
And the Bush tax cuts were made permanent. I don't know how that's possible.
No.
But we're being told that he made the Bush tax cuts permanent. And it's just, and it was business as usual. One of the things that I noted early in his time in office is who we filled his cabinet with. You know, ex Citibank, my memory's kind of
just businessmen.
It was the bankers, the New York bankers, the big banking firm.
Oh yeah.
And it was like those people, and there's this revolving door between government and the corporate sector now, and it's totally a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And it's just, after the 2007 housing crisis, and not one of them prosecuted under the Obama White House.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm glad some brown was in the White House. I mean, it looked nice, and he made better speeches than his predecessor. But I mean, you know, and I'm sure he's a nice dude.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a nice dude. I find him likable.
I liked him, yeah.
And just, you know,
I loved Obama.
Yeah.
I loved him. I know he made mistakes. He should have jailed bankers. That pissed off a lot of people.
Mistakes. Yeah, like he overlooked something. No, you can't get in that office without making the deals with those people. I mean, Kennedy found that out.
He blew up a lot of Pakistani weddings, you know, and then Reg pointed out to me, which I also felt and remembered, that, you know, one of his big driving points in the campaign was shutting down Guantanamo, and that we were above torture and all that. So, a lot of shit stayed the same.
Yeah. This is always the way, like you said, that big fanfare, and then because they're in the pockets of the businessmen.
Yeah,
but I still have coffee mugs and a commemorative plate that I eat off of with Obama's face on it. After talking with Reg, I might put him on the top shelf.
I still keep him, but I don't want to see him.
I remember. I
won't destroy them, but I'll use them a little less.
I remember my old man told me I was spouting off about a bummer one day, and he says, the things you mad at him about, what's that thing you call redistribution of wealth? He said, if he do the kind of stuff you're talking about, he'll get shot in the head. And he said, you can't get mad at another man for not wanting to get shot in the head if you ain't willing to get shot in the head.
Yeah. I think that's pretty high up on my list.
That's one of my favorite Bill Hicks jokes. He said, I don't think it matters who's in charge. I think whenever someone gets elected president, they're taken into a secret room and they're showed a film of the Kennedy assassination
from an angle
you've never seen before. Yeah. Any questions?
No, I get it. I see myself out.
I think that sums it up.
What's my agenda? You want me to bomb Baghdad? You got it.
Give me those buttons. Yeah.
There's a threat.
I went down a wormhole looking at Obama and I was looking at all these other things, and then you end up getting to Louis Farrakhan.
Who probably was instrumental in killing Malcolm X, don't you think?
Who's that?
Louis Farrakhan. He came to power after he was a part of the... He's been running.
I can't say that I would doubt that. No, I do. I don't believe that.
No.
I believe it was the U.S. government along with a control set of Muslim faction, with Nation of Islam faction. But I think it was the CIA, and I think, yeah.
Well, I do like that he's been so staunch about bringing the bow tie back to men's fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, if nothing else, he looks sharp.
I mean, I think
sharp as a tack.
You can say a lot of things about Louis Farrakhan. I mean, I don't hear some of the things he don't say about aliens and Jews, and I'm like, okay, well, I just...
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not ready to put Malcolm's assassination at him. I mean, there's just too... I mean, he was a kid at the time. How old was he at the time? No. I'm not saying he didn't have some involvement. I mean, I doubt that too. But if he did, it was much lower down the level. That was the USA special.
Maybe he just drove the getaway car.
Yeah. Just dragging around his little baby car.
When the CIA bought the gas.
Wow, I believe that.
So do you find it depressing, really? Like when you look into it, the way that the fact that the world is run by, I mean, it's always been corrupt from the top down. But it seems to be getting worse now, and they seem to be more blatant with it. Like they just go, "Yeah,
we are." Everybody seems like a scumbag now. I think there's a small band of true-hearted people that are still trying to be good people, in my opinion.
Yeah, you
know? That's kind of the theme.
It's getting smaller and smaller, it seems. Yeah. And
like Reg said something really cool in his show about used to be when he was, what is it? When I was growing up, people were concerned with being a good person.
Yep.
And now it's.
People are more concerned about feeling good about whatever kind of person they are.
Yeah, like if you're a scumbag, you're gonna feel...
Yeah.
That thing really, yeah. really nails it. Because like my brothers are fucking hammerheads, and they're proud of their ignorance. They're proud that they've never been anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
We were talking about that just now. I was saying to Reg, in last year's show, I was saying, like, if you're lying on your bed and you're going, oh, I'm a bit of a cunt. Yeah, no, you're not. You're not a cunt, because cunts don't think that way. They're cunts. And they're not. There's no remorse. They don't go, oh shit, I should probably stop doing that.
You're probably just an asshole.
You're just an asshole.
Yeah, this is their time. I think now is the time for cunts and bullies and assholes. If you're a cunt, this is your period.
This will be. They'll look back at these years as the golden age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh man, I could just say shitty things about women and blacks and Jews and the people used to applaud me and stuff.
I wish it was 2019 again.
Oh man,
those were the good old days.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't have to wear this shitty hood. You could just be out.
Oh,
free.
Man. Liberals hated each other.
Well, this is, I mean, that social media is just a wash, especially Twitter. It's just, you're never more than 280 characters away from some fucking dickhead. No matter what you post. Like, I posted a thing about Notre Dame burning down. I just went, oh, how come we can find that money that quick, but we can't find that money quickly for...
Well, that's the whole issue in France, is all those Yellow Vest people protesting, and they didn't have any extra money for them. And then
Yeah.
That's exactly the thing. And then all these rich people have donated to the Reconstruction Project because they want their names on the plaques and shit. And it's like, in a snap, all this money has appeared.
Yeah.
So the resentment by the working class in France is made even deeper.
Yeah. And then they made out like the Yellow Vests were fucking terrorists.
It was a George Carlin that said, homelessness. If you could find a way to like run a program for homeless people, or like some rich scumbag could like peel off a few million off the top, you see the streets of North America clear up pretty goddamn quick. If you can find a way to make a few million off the homeless, you see.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This show is made by Dark Horse Digital. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.
It's getting worse as well now, especially in this country. Used to be one guy would wander the town. He was the tramp.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knew him. He was just this wacky dude with his hat on back to front. And
yep. He was, you know, the town nonconformist.
Yeah. Yeah, he was eccentric or he was whatever he was doing. But now you've got people have got the entire contents of their houses propped up against railway stations under bridges. And you're just like, how the fuck did it get to this? There's like 350,000 homeless people now. And counting, and you're like, what do we do? You know, it makes me realise when I'm moaning because I've gone, I've got to go to Leeds for one day to go and tell some jokes. It makes you realise how lucky you are.
Yeah, it does make you feel lucky, but I think we're going through a phase. Well, obviously, I think I feel like I have to say something in defense of social media.
This epidemic of modern assholishness is going to pass.
Yeah, yeah. And I think these are some positive things about it. I think one, social media serves as a reservoir, to some extent, where assholes can go and vent and not be a danger to the rest of society. Sort of like British football. You've got to have somewhere where the powerless masses, get to go and tee off on something, and it's like, fine. Let them go in imaginary land and do that.
Yeah, you're right.
And if you're getting hurt by people spotting off in imaginary land, then stay off imaginary land.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's your choice. Don't get into it.
And yeah, it's and social media is what you make it. I mean, yeah, assholes can come up, but I think the worst thing about social media is that it's made stupid people fall in love with their opinions. Mm. They feel that the way we cover,
amen.
People love their opinions, and they feel like people feel like their opinions are equals to an expert's facts.
Yeah.
Just, you know, yeah. But see, the good thing is, even though we're in the midst of it, it's unpleasant. It's out in the open, and if you can see what your problem is, that's half liberation right there. It's like when you correctly identify what your problem is.
Yeah, so. I think that's what I've been doing in the last couple of years, was identifying what my problem was. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've talked to you earlier, mm-hmm. just that.
How do you tell yourself the truth without stroking yourself.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Being honest with yourself.
You can stroke yourself after you finish telling yourself the truth.
Yeah.
But there's these people who are constantly stroking themselves while they're telling themselves the truth, which means they cherry pick the truths that they'll accept.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, I try to have like a day or month where it's like non-stroking day.
I think I did it with, because I was married for a bit, but, you know, and I've past relationships, I've been messing around and doing all these other things and upsetting loads of people. And but because I always felt like, I'm owed something. What was happening was I hadn't dealt with stuff from when I was a kid, and there was a lot of resentment from various bits and bobs. I was just taking it out on everybody, like subconsciously. And then one day when my marriage broke down, I was like, right, this is another relationship that's fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucked it. And it was the day I went, I fucked it, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And going forward, it's been, now I've taken responsibility, not blaming anyone. I go, okay. All the mistakes you make, but try not to make those again.
Well, it's like every relationship, you get better.
Yeah.
And like, I'm coming out of a 10-year relationship, married for 7, and I love my ex-wife. We had talked last night. We're still close. And she made me a better person in every way. And
same.
It's funny. It's like now that I'm 52, and now I think I might be a decent partner in my next relationship. Because
right.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned to keep the toilet seat down when I was in my 20s and not leave, dirty dishes and shit lying around. And
yeah.
But it's like, you know, just, but other things like conversation and things that your partner needs.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the last of 9 children. And My relationship with my father is almost completely different, between him and his other children.
Mm.
And my father, he was around, he walked me to school every morning, he made breakfast, and he talked to me a lot. And I was talking to my sister about this, and she said, Daddy had his first child at 19. And she said, and during our childhoods, he was out there running the streets, gambling, chasing women, drinking. She said, but it was somewhere around 50 when you came along that he began to start to be interested in being a father.
Right, yeah.
So he sired his first one at 19, but started to get interested in fatherhood around 50.
Wow, man.
Yeah, I told you, my father was the same. He told me, I had a little sister, my two older brothers, he was rougher
and
on them. And he told me and my sister, by the time you guys rolled around, I had parenting figured out a little bit. He had made all the mistakes on those two.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
You know? Which is where all the resentment towards me came from.
That's it, yeah. Now we're getting somewhere.
Oh, the cute little kid gets a new toy.
Yeah. We're going to bully the fuck out of him for that. Yeah. But I was the same. It's like, my ex-wife, classy lady. She's a very classy lady. But, you know, I fucked it But like you just said, Tom, I'm now a much better person. I'm much better at, I understand people more. And we don't know if that comes with age.
But don't do yourself down now. Your ex-wife, she's probably a better person for having gone through that experience with you.
Yeah, true.
You know?
That's what Ashna says about, we said it to each other last night, you know?
There have been plenty of women that I've dated, and after they broke up with me, they went straight into marriage with the perfect dude. I've graduated a lot of women from Reg U. From Reg University, boy.
Your prep school.
Yeah, man.
Reggie's prep school.
I have strong alumni participation too.
I look forward to that reunion in 20 years.
I've graduated a lot of gone to fine relationship careers. Fine relationship.
My ex-wife now, she's remarried.
She happy as fuck.
Having the best time. She wouldn't have done that if she'd stayed where she was, which was in the church. Mm. She was a Jehovah's Witness.
Mm-hmm.
And she left that to dance with the devil, man.
She went to Rich University.
Yeah. I thought of it that way before. I'm too busy being down on myself.
Yeah.
This has been a good chat. Learning some shit.
Who needs therapy when you have comedian friends?
Oh, man. But it's nice that you can still talk to your ex. And
it's such a rare, beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get divorced. I was perfectly comfortable.
Yeah.
It was her idea. She was right. And there was no infidelity, no major crisis, nobody's angry about anything. We just equally divided the money we had in the bank, and I'd still help her any way I can,
Yes. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I remember.
She's helped me with this book I'm trying to write. So we're working on projects together. She's amazing. A genius. Well, she's from Holland, and as Reg knows, the Dutch people are pretty higher intelligent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she spent 10 years around comedy. She's got a great comedy brain. Mm-hmm. She's seen thousands of comedians and has strong opinions like I do about it.
Yeah. One of the things I fell in love with being in Britain, and certainly in Holland, is I was stunned over here. I tell my friends back home, I said, in Britain, you can be openly smart and still get laid.
Yeah.
Be openly smart.
Well, the Dutch, I'd never been before. I'd never been into the Netherlands. Jade and I gigged over there recently. And they're very chilled out people. And as you're doing the gig, I'm like, oh man, I don't know how this is going across. And afterwards, I go, dude, that was really great. I loved it. And I'm like, oh man, I thought you were bored. And I'm like, no, we were watching you.
Yeah. It's not their first language, their process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they got to give that moment to especially the way I talk as well.
But imagine us, like, being able to comprehend another comedian's language.
No.
Break down the Dutch are amazing.
I remember watching, I went to a Polish comedy night in Brixton. And the rhythms are the same.
None of their shoes were tied.
None of them. Exotic jeans. Very exotic jeans there, John. Yeah, leather jackets.
They kept screwing in light bulbs.
Yeah. Leave the shelves alone. We've got this to do.
It's always those jokes when we were kids. How many Polish people just take the screw in a light bulb and that kind of shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember when I was at Rotterdam.
Dumb racist jokes.
Yeah. But it was always
but
the
that
Irish
light bulb
jokes,
joke, it just fits every group, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I remember it was like... And when I was at RADA, it was like, how many actors does it take to screw in the light bulb? One or two. One to screw it in and one to say, I could have done that.
Yeah.
And what was that other one I said I got from RADA the other day? It was like, somebody was being officious, really officious with us. And I leaned over to Tom and I said, at RADA, they used to say, there's nobody more royal than the king's butler.
True, man. There was always, you're right, there was the one, how many women does it take to screw in a light bulb? Mm. Like, none, just let her cook in the dark. It's fucking shocking.
I didn't know that one, I didn't see that one coming.
But there's that shit, and there was a lot of Irish jokes as well growing up.
And the French and the Dutch both make fun of the Belgians. People make fun of someone everywhere.
Yeah.
In Israel, they make Palestine jokes, and Palestinians make jokes.
Yeah, I remember my first year in England. I was
hatred to humor.
I was staying in Walthamstow. There's a gay guy that and he let me sleep out in his shed. It was warm, and he had a futon out there. Loads of books, and he was telling me how when he goes to visit his German boyfriend in Germany, the German gay guys give him shit because he's English.
Yeah, right.
And I said, but y'all both gay.
Yeah.
Surely y'all got enough enemies, right?
Yeah.
Surely,
yeah,
I mean,
that divides that.
I mean, you're gonna
small enough cake already. You know?
You like dick, I like dick. Why are we
fighting?
Why do you still have your pants on?
It's very English to have your pants on. Stuff. It does blow my mind that there's still prejudice.
What was that thing that
little things?
What was that thing that Richard Pryor said when he went to film Stir Crazy? He was like, there's Muslims, there's Dublin Muslims, there's Nazis. He says, they all criminals, and even they can't unite. Even they can't unite.
Oh, man. But you're in a better place now, Tom.
Oh, right. My God, yeah. I'm in a great place. I've been hanging out with Reginald D. Hunter for 2 months.
I love how he says my whole name. Remember
that? Everyone does. No one says Reg.
No, I say Reg all the time. What are you talking about?
No, I love the way you say it.
Reginald D. Hunter.
I didn't say you never... Oh, my goodness.
I remember someone telling me that you were a character actor. When I started, they said that you were a character. They told me that. And I'm like, what? Yeah. They're just fucking with me.
Somebody put a false thing on... Was it on Wikipedia?
Yeah, right.
That I was that I appeared in the original Tales of the Crypt.
Yeah, right.
There was some black guy in there, apparently. And it was
like, it was you.
Yeah, they thought it was me. It was like, well, that was running, man. I think I was just getting out of high school.
Yeah. Well, this has been a good tour, though. You've been traveling to Scotland and She's going
everywhere, man. Yeah. All over the country. It's been great. Because I haven't been over in 5 years. And I used to come over a lot. Took a break because, I mean, I used to party really hard when I came. And then just life took me in a different direction. Well, I mean, the last time I came over, I got sober in 2014. And then that was the last time I was over. Reg invited me to do this. And in the dark days of my divorce in January and February, this is what I've been looking forward to.
Yeah, it kept me going
from going really deep, and you know, and I didn't. It wasn't a terrible breakup, but no. So yeah, man, life is.
And I was
life is really happy right
excuse
now.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. I was recovering from a broken leg 2 years ago. It's nearly healed now, and I gotten fat and stuff, and on a selfish level, I wanted to have Tom over for two reasons. One, I wanted to get my timing back, and I figured if I just be riding this cat every day.
Get the energy.
And then, and also as well, he's in pursuit of smart material, which I am.
Yeah.
And it's and so it's like, I think it's our next shows where the fruit of this is really going to be shown.
Yeah, man. But it's this,
You mentioned, you make the flippant remark about dick jokes and like, we can refer to comedy as dick jokes. Like, when I was younger, I love dirty jokes, love Richard Pryor. All my favorite comedians, you know, did dirty shit. But as I've gotten older, I just want to do the smartest material I can.
Yeah.
And then, plus, you know, in an hour where, you know, Brexit is happening, Trump is happening, Syria is happening, Yemen is happening, you going to stand there and talk about your dick?
The world's on fire. Yeah, but look at this.
This is not being used enough. You going to do that?
What? Because I said to you the other night, Tom, when I saw you at the Bill Murray, and I remember I said to you, I remember seeing you years ago up the creek. So I was a barman there, and I remember that's when I first became aware of you guys. Oh, man, what a gig.
I used to rip the roof off the joint.
That's what I remember seeing you there.
Yeah.
And then just seeing you, you know.
Because we talked about chaos, and I have this really, I get this calm feeling in chaos. It was always chaotic at Up the Creek.
It always felt like something was going to happen and anything might. Like that. Like,
Not even in the gig, just around the gig. Yeah.
And like if somebody gets a pint glass smashed on someone's face at any minute.
And if you was doing like between 4 and 6 gigs on a Friday, Saturday night, which a lot of us did when we was hustling around.
Smart.
It was like, you if you looked on the schedule and your last one was at the Creek,
That's
some fine punctuation.
That's where I'm unplugging, and that's I could end up anywhere after that.
Ended up at the store wasn't bad either.
No,
but the Creek was a little looser.
Yeah, well, that was my. I thought all comedy was like Up the Creek. So when I started doing comedy, and they're like, no, that's what you do later. You've got to come and do this room here. No one in it. You got to learn, and then you earn that. But you got to do this first. Oh fuck. Yeah, it was a real.
Well, I always like to go because there was a lot of English comedians I knew who wouldn't do it because it was too pugilistic. But I always liked it for that reason. I think you gotta have like kind of a gunfighter attitude.
Yeah.
Did you ever do Late and Live at Edinburgh?
Oh man, well I got a great story about Late and Live.
Oh, okay.
So it was in the year 2000, which is before, and this is in the story also involves Georgia. Rich Hall, I mean, in Late and Live back then, I went back in 2014 and did Late and Live like 5 times. It ain't like it was. But like late 90s, early 2000s, that was, people went there just to heckle and rip people to shreds. So I had just gone to check out the festival. I had just moved to Amsterdam and I was playing in England a lot and I, you know, wanted to do the festival one day. So I was checking it out. It was an all-American show hosted by Louis Schaefer. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people went there just to heckle Louis Schaefer.
Yeah.
And Rich Hall was headlining, closing the thing. So it turned into this anti-American rally. Mm-hmm. And every comedian, it was lambs to the slaughter. And Rich Hall... I was already drunk when I got there, but my great old friend Rich Hall mysteriously gets laryngitis and asked me if I would take his set for him.
You're right.
And me being the cocky prick that I am, I thought, they're going to love me.
I gotta turn this shit around.
So I'm pounding more beers, I'm waiting, and people are getting slaughtered, and I'm enjoying it. You know? And so the sound man fucked me. I'm not a flag waver. I'm not a nationalist.
Nah.
This already rabid anti-American audience. He played God Bless America as I walked out. This already rabid anti-American audience lost their fucking minds. And I couldn't even get started on the mic. They're yelling, fuck you, go back to America, and fuck you, go back to America. And I had this really surreal moment. I can still picture it. Because I still smoked cigarettes back then, and you could smoke in there.
Yeah.
I sat down Indian style on the stage, and I lit a cigarette, and I just looked at these people, and I soaked in this panoramic scene, and I can still picture it to this day. All these ugly, contorted faces pointing Jesus. And spittle coming out of their mouth. Yeah. Fuck you, go back to America, fuck you.
Fuck me, man.
So I look over, the stage manager wants me to get up. I get up, I try to tell a joke, and I told a joke. He got a smattering of a little laugh, and I think that was the moment I could have turned it around. Mm. But the next joke I chose wasn't the right one. And then they just the din of noise and screams. And that particular show was my Vietnam. Mm-hmm. For years after that, I would wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. Oh, Jesus. Jesus. Still thinking I was on that stage and fuck you, go back to America. So I think it was about 9 years after that, I'm headlining at the Punchline in Atlanta, Georgia. And they're great. They used to put you at the Hilton Suites. So you had a suite.
Yeah, nice.
And you had a bedroom, and these French doors would open, and a really nice living room. So I had just woken up at like noon, and I made a cup of coffee. I'm having my first cup of, I'm in my underwear by myself in this Hilton in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I turn on CNN, and the old town center of Edinburgh is engulfed in flames. And I knew that's where the old Leighton Live was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The so I'm alone in my underwear in Atlanta, Georgia. And I stood up and went. You never forget where you got your ass handed to you.
And then
so I was when I went back in 2014, I went loaded for bear. I just thought of every evil thing I could say to another human being, just stockpiled all these great comebacks. And I got heckled, and I told that story every night, and I was like, fuck you, I ain't leaving.
Yeah,
I'm here,
yeah,
you're dealing with me this time.
But you know, the way it kind of is now, man, it's like remembering the bully that beat you up back in the day,
yeah.
And you get beefed up and strong over a period of years, and when you go back, you find the motherfuckers in a wheelchair and quite pleasant.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm really sorry for what I did. Come here, man. Yeah. I did Late Life first time last year and was ready. I was like, I'm fucking having this. And I went out, guns blazing, and they're like, nah, chill out, man.
Do your show. We want to hear material.
Yeah.
It's much more congenial. Man.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up naked at the end. I made a joke about what I look like naked. And they were just like, off. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. And then I couldn't get past them screaming off. So I...
Do you know Tony Woods?
Yeah.
Tony Woods showed me how to deal with that kind of situation like that. I just was with him, I was watching. It was some gig in Delaware, and I was in town, and it was like some university gig. And it was a black student union at this gig. And these kids, they were like influenced by what's that show where they used to boo people off?
Evening at the Apollo.
Evening at the Apollo. Right. And so they had that kind of vibe. So this first guy comes out, and they listen to one, two jokes, and they start going, boo, get off. Then, so they boo him off. Second guy comes out, they didn't even like the way he was dressed before he could even speak. So Tony Woods comes out, and they start yelling, look at this old nigga, get this old nigga off stage. So Tony just looked surprised, and he reached his pocket, and he pulled out a cigarette, and he lit it, and he just stood there and he smoked it while he was doing the same thing, taking in the panoramic view. And then around minute two, they started calming down a bit, and then by minute four, they were completely quiet. And then Tony says, whenever you're ready. And they got quiet, And he had the best set of the night.
Yeah, right.
Whenever you're ready.
Whenever you're ready.
Yeah.
Tony Woods is one of the true masters of the game.
Yeah.
Known him for years. Great man and one of the funniest comedians.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Any man I love. I'm not even man. Any person that I love, this, and when I laugh and think about this, I go, that nigga there. He can be black, white, whatever. That nigga there.
Oh, man. I say it in my head. I don't say it out loud. That shit. It's lovely, man. And I wanted to, because listening to your podcast and then that particular episode, Suffering, was because I've seen you be on stage and seen you just do your thing and, oh, this man's fucking bulletproof, man. And then listening to that particular episode, I was like, ah, oh, man, it was...
I think one of the best things we can do as comedians, I mean, because we are artists, as pretentious as that is to say, but you need to feel your feelings.
Yeah.
And then, like, something like a divorce, that's a big event in life. Mm. So I was having a tough time when I think that one was, like, in February.
Yeah, but you did it in such a way that it was just... I could relate to everything, and it was just nice hearing someone like you talk about that. And I was like, fuck.
I love when people tell me they enjoyed episodes of my podcast. You know, I put a lot of effort into it. I don't, I won't put one out for a couple of weeks if I don't have something good to say or present to people and shit. And oddly enough, most of my listeners are in London. LA, San Francisco, and London are my. My wife used to look at this.
Hey, man, you just said something interesting about, like, if you don't have nothing interesting to say for a couple of weeks, you won't put nothing out?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so Tom has his own sort of prime directive about his own podcast, like, your own standards about what you want.
Yeah.
Can you tell some more about, like,
what you... Well, people feel like, you know, you need to put it out every week on a certain day at a certain time to build the followers. And you know what? My wife helped me with everything.
Mm.
So, but before her, it was difficult doing it on my own.
Yeah.
And I had a dude that would post them up for me and stuff. When she was with me, I was really helped the flow with the technical shit that a lot of men of a certain age aren't that great with.
Same, yeah.
But now I'm like, I got my core listeners, and the Patreons are the people who give the money, and I treat them real good. I mail them shit every month.
Nice.
If you give $20 a month, I send a personal postcard somewhere in the world. And I've become friends with all of them.
Yeah.
And then, like, a lot of them wrote me when I was going through my divorce. We know you're going through a hard time. Don't feel like you have to put out an episode until you're ready. So they're like friends. They understand.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and
fantastic.
It's like, I'm working on this Lord Byron episode. Like, I like to do the kind of book reports.
Wow, yeah.
I've done episodes on Voltaire and the French Revolution and Seneca. I did one on Seneca recently. I'm really into knowledge, and I want to present, you know, my podcast is called Tom Rhodes Radio Smart Camp.
Yeah, yeah.
I want people to get something out of it. So
I get all
this
my
Lord Byron
podcasts.
Episode, I was thinking about it last night as I was going to bed. I'm reading this last book. And I'm like, I really like to record this while I'm in England.
Oh, yeah.
Because I did it for England. But, like, if it's not going to be the best it can be, I need to, you know, take my time and make some notes. And
course,
then if I don't sit down to record it until I get back from England to make the quality better, that's the way. Because it's going to be online forever.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You're making shit that's going to be up there forever.
Yeah.
Like this particular episode. I mean, I would listen to this 10, 20 years from now. It's got loads of great information.
Yeah, man, that's what I get all my information from podcasts.
People want to know what 2019 was like.
Yeah, yeah, it was all racists and...
Heyday of bullies and guns.
I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, when you write something or you post something, it's there.
That's right. Yeah, you've published it.
It's like a fart that won't disperse. It's like, don't go into this room. My dad farted there in 82.
Yeah. It's in the walls now.
Yeah.
But it's just there. And it's just, and that's another thing that I think this new age is going to do. I think a lot of us that have been on social media in any intense form, at some point, we're probably going to have to answer for something we said 20 years ago. I mean, it seems to be the rage now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think by the time that happens, I think we'll have a better handle on it. But certainly if we run for office or anything meaningful, you know, somebody gonna say, well, in 2019, you said this about, you know, trees.
That's right, yeah.
And then we got trees now. So like, you know, why you said that shit about trees?
It's true, man. Yeah. Oh, well, fuck it. It's out there.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens after this.
Can I get a hit of that Holy Spirit song?
Thank you very much, boys.
Hey, Rich, you're such a good dude, man.
It's
thanks
been a
for,
fucking pleasure, man.
Respect,
thank you. No,
brother.
Thanks for letting me come in.
Any
thanks,
the brotherhood man. Of nice, up the man. Creek.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's why I felt I could reach out and go come and do this. So I felt a connection because of the creek. You know. Thanks, boys.
Insane in the membrane.
So that was Tom and Reg. Lovely, lovely, lovely men. Just in, it was in, like, I, you know, I say that this podcast is about men's mental health or mental health in general, and it goes everywhere. It veers off all over the place, and sometimes it's just nice to hear people talking, just having a chat, isn't it? Just having a lovely conversation to hear the stories of, especially people from other places than you. You know, it's nice to hear, isn't it? It's more interesting. I love all that. And as you could hear, we were out in the garden, so there would have been the sound of planes going over and crows and all sorts. But that adds to it as well. So anyway, listen, thank you for tuning in. Very much appreciate it. Again, thank you to everyone for all your lovely comments and messages. Don't forget to rate us 5 stars on all the usual podcast doobries. And that'd be great. And have a great week. And I'll see you next time. Cheers.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.